Well, good morning, everybody. It is really great to be here. I was here and I brought one of my kids, the oldest, with me. That was 3.5 years ago. So it's really nice that this time I could bring the whole family here and we could meet you guys and see you all face to face again. So my name is Brant Watley, and my family, Lainey Joy, is my wife, and Jackson, Boaz, Rilla, and Zadok. And we have a fifth on the way, so we're really excited about that, due in February. And yes, we serve with Ethnos Canada, a mission organization whose purpose is to bring the gospel not only to where people have not yet heard, but to locations where people have no ability to hear about what Christ has done for them, apart from them being sent and then going to one of these locations. So often these locations are the hardest to reach places, the most difficult regions to live in, and they're unreached for a reason, because, you know, maybe it's nice to be a missionary in the Bahamas or somewhere, but, you know, it's hard to convince someone to go where it's negative 40s or where it's 40 degrees positive and you're just dying of heat. So that is the missionary we serve with. And yes, we were up in Iqaluit, Nunavut. We were there for 1 year exactly to the day. And that was 3 years ago we left, and 2 years ago we came back, and I'll get into more of the details about that. And I just want to thank you guys so, so much for being a part of what God is doing to bring the gospel across this world. And you guys have been so faithful in coming alongside us and being a part of this ministry with us. And we truly could not have, the Lord has sustained us through all of you, knowing that you guys are praying for us and that you've been supporting us. And that is huge. So currently, the last 2 years, yes, we've been on medical leave. And I would say about a month ago now, we are starting to phase out of our medical leave and starting to get plugged back into ministry. Our Ethnos Canada campus is in Durham. That is 3.5-4 hours north of here. So that's where we've been the last 2 years. And so Lainey is plugging in with we've got a missionary training program. And we just are starting a Bible school this fall. So she's getting the Bible school kickstarted and then revamping some of the training, making some adjustments to that course as well. So she's doing that. And then I'm part of the IT team right now. And that has been a lot of fun trying to get the whole department. Like, we're really, really short staffed. So any ways that our IT team can get in there and automate a lot of their workflows and get things going more efficiently is what we're trying to do this year. So what are our future plans? I don't know. Honestly, we don't know. We're waiting on the Lord to guide us. Our heart is to return to the Arctic, and our time frame would be next summer. We had a big doctor's appointment earlier this year, and he gave me like 6 or 7 referrals, and I've got 3 more to go. And he said, to get through all these, you're going to need at least till next summer. So we got 1 more year to go, and in the meantime, it really is just praying to the Lord, asking him to guide us, because the cold is pretty miserable with my face, all the titanium. Like, I got a new face, but the cold, that could be rough. And with my eyes, my tear ducts were damaged. So when it's dry and cold, my eyes are just like burning and it's very uncomfortable. So there's, you know, the Lord can heal my eyes. I've been doing a lot of things to make it more doable for me to survive the winters here, but this next winter will be the third one. And if it's miserable here all winter, even down south here, I don't know what the odds are of it suddenly getting better to go up to the Arctic where it's way worse. So that's on our minds, is the health concern. So other possibilities are maybe Indonesia. I've got family over there. That's where I grew up. It's hot. It's humid. My eyes love that. I still remember how to speak Bahasa, is the Indonesian language there. So that could be a possibility in the future. I just want to be honest with everyone that we're not like, this is going to happen, right? We honestly don't know. And we're just looking to the Lord to lead us. And we just want to be obedient servants of him. And he knows where we can be used most in his hand. So this morning, instead of a missions challenge, like I typically really enjoy to do, I thought I would do more of a testimony style, and typically I can just have some outline points and just go for it, but since the traumatic brain injury, I've had to kind of slow down, and I've had just to write my messages down so I'm not, you know, missing big chunks and stumbling along the way. Still healing my brain here. So the title of my message is Refined by Fire, Finding God in the Furnace of Affliction. And this is a topic I know most of you will be able to relate with. Our lives are not easy here in this broken world. And if you have not yet experienced great turmoil and suffering in your life, know that you likely will or will have someone very close to you who will as well. So these principles will either prepare you for the future, help someone, or maybe comfort your soul right now in the midst of it. So I pray this will be an encouragement. So I'll start off from the beginning so you guys have a bit of a perspective on who I am, and we'll go through there. So I grew up as a third-generation missionary kid in Indonesia for 12 years. My family moved into a remote and completely isolated Stone Age tribe called the Moi in the year 2000. My parents and coworkers spent 4 years learning the language from scratch with no ability to communicate, and then finally began translating and teaching through the entire Bible from creation to Revelation. Just 2 years ago, the Moi had a huge celebration over the dedication of the Bible translation. And there's now a thriving church with hundreds of believers, and they are now spreading the gospel to the surrounding tribes themselves. Witnessing the power of the gospel transform these people's lives from darkness to light, from fear to faith, is what challenged me to become a missionary. Since then, Lane and I completed 2 years of Bible school. I worked as a carpenter for 4 years while we served as youth leaders. We finished 2 years of missionary training, in the middle of which I had a motorcycle accident that took 2 years to recover from. After training, we spent a year to raise financial support and be a part of the first missionary team from Ethnos, Canada, that was sent to serve the Inuit of the Arctic. We were on the mission field in Arctic Canada for 1 year to the day on July 30th, 2024, when I was in a terrible ATV accident. I saw the power of God in the jungle, but I was about to face a different kind of wilderness, one that would test whether I believed that same gospel applied to my own suffering. Here are some of the highlights just in the last 6 years. Again, in 2020, survived a near-death motorcycle accident that required a 2-year recovery and 4 surgeries with 6 to 10 hours of excruciatingly painful therapy every single day for that 2-year period. At the same time, our kids suffered multiple vaccine injuries. As we were preparing to go to Indonesia, we needed a lot of vaccines. And that led to reoccurring seizures and food allergies. While we were serving in the Arctic, we woke up one midnight to a frightening chimney fire. And then shortly after, a drunk man who was waiting for me to leave the house broke into our home and sexually threatened my wife and my daughter. Around the same time, my nephew Asher passed away 3 days after his birth. Then in 2024, I had another near-death accident on an ATV. I was medevaced to Ottawa with a shattered face, smashed wrist, and a traumatic brain injury. I spent 21 days in the hospital battling intense demonic visions and attacks, went through 3 major facial reconstruction surgeries, and during that time, Lainey almost went into a 2.5-month preterm labor. For the last 2 years, I've been in ongoing, countless therapies, and because of that extended medical leave, we had to step away from our ministry for 2 years. The last accident and this long recovery left me diagnosed with PTSD, depression, and anxiety. My capacity was so limited that I often felt like a failure. A horrible father, a distant husband, and a friend with nothing left to contribute. I'm sure many of you have wondered how Lainey has endured all this, carrying the heavy physical and emotional load of our family and her pregnancy while caring for our 3 other young children. The way I have seen her faithfully call out to her Savior and run to Him as her refuge day after day has deeply challenged and encouraged me. Even in those darkest moments, she has modeled what it looks like to trust the Lord when everything around her felt so unstable. I can't even begin to put into words what a profound blessing from the Lord she has been to our family through all of this. The Lord has truly sustained her, strengthened her, and empowered her to be the glue that has held our family together when my own fragmented self and the attacks of the enemy tried so hard to pull our family apart. My longing and prayer is that the Lord would continue His healing and sanctifying work in my life. so that I may learn to be Christ to her every single day in the same way that she has been Christ to me. Now, our trials are not only about us. They ripple outward. They affect those walking right beside us who inevitably get bumped and bruised along the way, and they become a testimony to those watching from a distance as the Lord works in truly marvelous and unexpected ways. We all have our list of trials and hardships that the Lord has allowed into our lives. And I don't list these things for your pity, but rather to reveal how Jehovah Rapha, the great healer, has and will continue to redeem our suffering. I know that he allows this for our good and his glory, but refining gold is a painful process. Submitting my life to the surgeon who meticulously cuts with the scalpel to reveal the tumor, the brokenness, the areas of my life that need to be rooted out is incredibly painful. And just when I think God has finally gone far enough and the worst is behind me, he goes deeper. I cry out, please stop. And yet again, he cuts deeper. There were days I lay in the hospital bed, yet after another surgery and complete blindness, wondering how much more I could take, wondering if I would ever see the Creator's beautiful design, if my wife and unborn child would be okay. The pain was constant. The future felt uncertain, and I felt completely alone and abandoned, even though I knew God was there, and Lainey never left my side. After a year of this prolonged pattern, something inside me began to break. I started to give up. I stopped crying out to God. Even in anger, I told myself, who am I to be angry at God? I thought I was just more spiritual to stay quiet and just endure. It reminded me of a baby elephant that is tied with a strong rope to a large post. Day after day, he fights and fights with everything he has to break loose, but there's no use. Eventually, the baby elephant's fight and his desire to escape are completely broken. Years later, that same elephant, now full grown and powerful, can be tied with a thin, weak rope to a small stake, and he doesn't even try to pull away. The fight is gone. He no longer cares. He has learned to stay right where he is. And that's exactly what happened to me. I grew too tired to keep wrestling with God. I became too disheartened to take another stroke of the scalpel. I still knew in my head that he loved me, but the pain no longer felt loving. And in the middle of those felt flames, something dangerous happened. My humility began to shrivel up, and my pride began to grow in its place. What surprised me most was how slowly and subtly it happened. Indifference didn't come crashing in like a wave. It crept in quietly, little by little, over many months. I didn't even realize the dangerous state I was in. Day after day, again, I stopped crying out to God. I stopped wrestling with him. I stopped asking why or even just getting angry. I told myself I was just being strong or trusting God. But really, I was growing numb. I thought staying quiet and enduring without complaint was more spiritual. But slowly, my honest dependence on God was replaced with emotional detachment. I was still going through the motions of faith, but my heart had quietly checked out. I didn't even realize my pride was overshadowing my humility. I was becoming self-protective instead of God-dependent. Looking back, I can now see exactly how it happened. My dependence on God has slowly faded. Again, my desire to wrestle, to be honest, to ask why, to seek his comfort, all of it had quietly disappeared and turned into indifference, apathy. Now let me ask you a question. What is the opposite of love? Many people would maybe quickly say hate. But I've come to believe it's really indifference. Indifference is the opposite of love because love actively cares, invests attention, moves toward connection. Indifference is complete emotional detachment. It simply doesn't care. Hate still involves strong feelings and a lot of mental energy. The person still matters to you. But indifference means the person or relationship no longer even registers on your radar. When someone becomes indifferent, love has truly died. Not because of rage or conflict, but because caring has been quietly replaced by apathy. And this year, the Lord has been so kind to help me see this and connect some of these dots. For a long time, I've been wondering why my walk with him felt so distant, so estranged, why my flesh seemed stronger than ever. And the answer was painful, but it was clear. My dependence on God had been replaced by indifference. In Galatians 5:16 says, "Walk in the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh." That's a promise. The results then are clear if we're not walking the Spirit. And by God's grace through my own sin, I was awakened to my wandering state. That indifference, that's what became my quiet rebellion. I stopped wrestling with God. I stopped crying out in anger or pain. I stopped hoping. And in that emotional numbness, my dependence on him slowly faded and my flesh grew stronger. But the question is, how do we walk in the Spirit when we are in the furnace? And the Lord has been graciously opening my eyes to the answer. And it starts with learning the biblical way of pouring out our hearts. Throughout the scriptures, we see God has provided the way for us to relate to him, even in the darkest pit. And I now see that God doesn't just allow us to pour out our hearts, but he commands it as part of our covenant relationship with him. I still have so much to learn about this, but here are some principles I've been able to pull from scripture when it comes to the biblical way of pouring out our hearts. Here's the command and invitation from Psalm 62:8. "Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us." Is pouring out my heart necessary since he sees my heart anyway? Yes, God already knows your heart. He knows every thought before it is on your tongue, Psalm 139. But he still invites you to speak it. This prayer or pouring out is not about informing God. It's about relating to him in intimacy. A refuge only helps when you actually run to it. And by speaking our pain out loud to God, we move toward him instead of retreating into indifference and numbness. Numbing ourselves is like that elephant at the stake. It starves our intimacy with God. Pouring out our heart is how we run into that refuge. This is the act of naming our emotions, shifts them from an overwhelming burden to something that we can process with God and lay before him. God designed our spirits, our brains, this way for relief, for healing, and for connection. So then, how do we pour out our hearts before God? Can we say anything that we want? And does our heart posture really matter? We can be raw, we can be honest, but posture does greatly matter. There is a clear line between godly, faithful lament and sinful grumbling. Biblical lament is directed to God. Even when angry, confused, or devastated, it still acknowledges that he is sovereign and the only one who can truly help us. Biblical lament is a humble surrender. Grumbling, on the other hand, is directed about God to others in our hearts. It judges him as unfaithful and denies his character. Grumbling is proud rebellion. You can be angry at God and still be in faith because you are still talking to him as God. Indifference is far more dangerous because it treats him as irrelevant. Job was angry and honest. David cried out in confusion. Hannah prayed in deep anguish, bitterness of soul, and intense grief. God welcomes these prayers when they come from a heart that still turns toward him. One of the most beautiful truths I'm learning is that God actually desires us to come to him honestly and pour out our hearts before him, even when our feelings are not based on truth. He doesn't want polite, cleaned up, polished prayers. He invites the raw, the messy, angry, numb, or confused ones. He can handle our honesty. In fact, he waits for it. Look at King David in the Psalms. In Psalm 13, he pours out his honest frustration and wrong thinking when he says, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me?" He feels abandoned. He feels like God has failed him, and he's not afraid to say it. Yet as he keeps pouring out his heart, something shifts. By the end of the same short psalm, he realigns to truth and declares, "But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me." Look at Psalm 88. It is entirely filled with his pain, to the very last verse that ends with, "Darkness is my closest friend," showing that God can handle prayers that don't yet have a happy ending. Yet amidst it, in verse 1, David is running to his refuge by, quote, "crying out to God day and night," with a heart posture that still acknowledges that God is the one who saves him. David's honest pouring out didn't push God away. It actually drew David back into restored fellowship and renewed hope. Now let's look at Job, who cursed the day of his birth, accused God of unfair treatment, and wrestled deeply with the why of his suffering. Some of my favorite verses are in Job, when even in his pain he declared, "Though he slay me, yet will I hope in him." Job 13:15. And in Job 23:10, "When he has tested me, I will come out as gold." It is important to note that as a human, Job did not pour out his heart in a perfect manner to God. Job was rebuked for presuming to understand and criticize God's sovereignty from his extremely limited human perspective. Job had crossed into accusing God of injustice and moral failure. Importantly, God did not rebuke Job for his raw, honest, and emotional outpouring, his deep grief, his anger, his questions of why, or his lamenting and his wrestling. And I completely missed that. In response to God's rebuke, Job humbled himself and repented, saying, "Therefore, I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes." He repented of his overreach and his limited understanding, not for the act of pouring out his heart. Job shows us that you can pour out everything, bitterness, accusations, despair, and still be called God's servant, as long as you remain willing to be corrected and humbled when God speaks. The line is crossed when we move from, "Lord, this feels unjust and I don't understand," to, "God, you are unjust and you are wrong." God can handle our full emotional honesty, but he will not allow us to sit in judgment over his character or his wisdom. You cannot say anything you want without consequence. Words do have power, and reckless accusations can lead to a hardened heart. But raw, honest struggle directed to God in faith is not only allowed, it is modeled for us. God didn't silence Job's pain. He met it with his majestic presence and ultimately restored him. Now we see good examples from David and Job. And here's a bad example from the Israelites in the wilderness. They murmured against God. They hardened their hearts and longed to go back to Egypt. Their complaint was not seeking God. It was rebellion against his leadership. And that led to judgment. The difference is direction. Lament moves toward God, and grumbling and indifference moves away from him. Let's look at Jesus as the last example to look at. Shows us the ideal. He is the perfect example of total honesty plus total submission. Yet listen to this. Even Jesus, in his humanity, did not have immediate submission to his Father. Jesus moved from intense agony to complete submission through a process of surrender. First, in the garden, he sought isolation, separating himself from the crowd, taking only Peter, James, and John to acknowledge the crushing weight of his grief. Second, he poured out an honest petition, collapsing face down to acknowledge God's absolute power while directly requesting, "Take this cup from me." Third, he endured a repetitive spiritual cycle, returning to pray three distinct times as his language shifted from asking for removal of the cup to accepting the cup's reality. And then finally, through the strength of this repeated processing, even while sweating great drops of blood, he forged an unshakable resolve, standing up to actively surrender to the Father's will. We will never reach his perfection on this side of eternity, but the human examples in the Bible show us the real process. Total honesty, wrestling, and eventual submission and trust. God gave us these messy human prayers as training wheels so we don't feel disqualified when our lament crosses the line to grumbling and our submission is not immediate. Here's a quick summary of these principles before moving on. We are commanded to pour out our hearts to God. This is an act of running to our refuge. In refusing to do so, we instead run away from our refuge towards indifference and numbness. The way in which we run towards our refuge is by directing our feelings, right or wrong, to God in humble, surrendered lament. We run away from our refuge by directing our feelings to be about God or to others in our hearts in prideful, judgmental grumbling. Now let's look at what humility looks like in fighting indifference. One of the things I've learned since my traumatic brain injury is that thankfulness and anxiety or fear actually run on the same neural pathway in our brain. They cannot fully occupy the same space at the same time. When I choose consistent thankfulness, even in the middle of fire, I begin to physically rewire my brain towards resilience and trust instead of despair and self-protection. Family, this is exactly what humility looks like in the middle of prolonged trials. And humility is the very thing that battles against indifference. Humility fights indifference head on, where indifference says, "I don't care anymore." Humility says, "Lord, I still care, and I still need you." Humility refuses to stay numb. It chooses to feel the pain, to bring it honestly to God, and to keep depending on him, even when every part of me wants to shut down. Indifference is passive surrender to the pain. Humility is active surrender to the surgeon. One kills relationship with God while the other restores it. To help me understand this battle even more clearly, I often think of standing on the frozen bay, stranded in the beginning of an Arctic winter. The ice looks solid, but underneath the water is freezing cold and rushing. Indifference is like deciding to just sit down on the ice and let the cold slowly numb your whole body until you no longer feel anything. You stop fighting the cold. Humility, on the other hand, is choosing to get up, start moving, face the pain, and cry out for help, even though your legs are shaking and you're terrified of falling through the ice. Movement hurts, but it keeps you alive. So let me share with you what humility has started to look like for me in the middle of suffering. First, humility looks like considering others more important than ourselves, Philippians 2:3. It means choosing to serve, even when I feel completely empty and weak. It means refusing to make my pain the center focus. Second, humility looks like submission. Acknowledging our desperate need for Christ, it says, Lord, I accept this trial as allowed by your hand, even when I don't understand it and even when it hurts. James 1, 2 to 4 puts it in this way. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Third, humility looks like honest confession. Bringing the anger, the fear, the numbness, the indifference straight back to God instead of stuffing it down and just pretending that I'm fine. Fourth, humility looks like casting all of your anxiety on Him because He truly cares for you. 1 Peter 5:7. This is humility in that it acknowledges I don't have the ability to handle my own anxiety and I need His help. Since my traumatic brain injury, I've spent a lot of time studying how we are physical, emotional, and spiritual beings. Real healing requires caring for all three, and here's what I've discovered. When we care for our physical bodies through rest, nutrition, and exercise, our emotional and spiritual health also benefit. The reverse is also true. When we pour out our hearts honestly before God and we choose thankfulness, it actually calms the nervous system, reduces inflammation in the brain, and makes it easier to care for our physical bodies. God created us as whole people, body, soul, and spirit, and He wants every part of us to thrive together. When one part suffers, the others suffer with it. When one part is cared for, the others are strengthened. If any of you are suffering according to God's will right now, and some of you are, here's the charge from 1 Peter 4:19. So if you are suffering according to God's will, keep on doing what is right and trust your lives to the God who created you, for He will never fail you. And maybe some of you are suffering because of your own sinful actions, but the answer is still the same. We humbly repent and we trust Him to lead us back into a sweet relationship with Him, knowing that our suffering is never wasted because He is using it to purify us and make us more like Christ. My challenge is don't let prolonged pain turn into indifference. The very act of pouring out our hearts is what keeps indifference from taking root. Don't let the scalpel make you numb. Don't let the rope around your ankle stay there because you've stopped fighting. Instead, clothe yourselves with humility today. Keep crying out to Him. Keep hoping in Him. Keep doing good, especially to the body of believers. And this week, I want to challenge each of you with four simple but powerful steps. First, set aside 10 minutes every day to pour out your heart to God honestly. Second, write down three fears or things you are angry about, and in confession, surrender those things to God. Third, write down three things you are thankful for, even if they feel small. And fourth, choose one practical way, just one way, to serve someone else, even when you feel completely empty. These small acts of humility are helping me fight indifference and walk in the Spirit in the midst of the fire. If you are angry, tell Him. If you are numb, tell Him you're numb. Even saying, Lord, I don't feel like talking to you right now, is still talking to Him. Honesty is the shortest distance between a broken person and a healing God. You are not just a patient under the scalpel. You are a beloved son or daughter in conversation with your Father. In a statement to close, because the God who allows the fire is the same God who will bring you through it, not just barely surviving, but refined, restored, and more dependent on Him than you have ever been before. a quote from Louis Voyer from Isaiah 48:10. I have chosen you in the furnace of affliction. From Louis, it is in the furnace of affliction where eternal love reveals its precious secrets. Look through the flames of affliction to the gold that God is refining underneath for his glory. He will not allow the fire to get a degree hotter that needs be until his face is reflected in the purified gold. And has it not been so that the glorious Son of God walking with you amid the glowing coals has been worth it all in light of the gold refined to his glory? He ends with, not much is learned outside the furnace of affliction. I want to close with a song called Though You Slay Me by Shane and Shane. And it is just a great reminder of a heart posture that honors the Lord in the midst of our suffering.